the 1979 graduation exercises with Mr. Simeon Oliver, May 29th, 1979, Unalaska City School.
Thank you. Thank you. to ask you to stand up again. Grant us, O Lord, heavenly wisdom that we may learn to seek thee above all things and understand all other things as they are. May the strength of God pilot us. May the power of God preserve us. May the wisdom of God instruct us. May the hand of God protect us. May the way of God direct us. May the shield of God defend us. Create therefore in us, O Lord, a new heart, and so renew our spirit that thy law may be my study, thy truth our delight, thy church our care, thy people our crown, thy righteousness our pleasure, thy service our government. We thank thee, O Creator, that thou hast vouchsafed to us thy grace in giving heed to learning. Bless our masters, parents, and teachers, who bring us to a knowledge of good, and grant to us the strength and firmness, and enrich us with the fullness of thy wisdom. Amen.
Thank you.
as accustomed as I am to public comment, this introduction has proven to be really hard. Part of the reason for the difficulty is that my first contact with this man began 47 years ago, when my mother first mentioned his name to me, and he's been an inspiration to me since that time. Reading his two books has been a big thrill. Talking to people that knew him, listening to them describe his musical ability, listening to his adventures as he made his way back home here again to Unalaska in the military, the names of the giants of classical music that came out of his mouth when he was my house guest during his past 4 days has really been exciting to me. Ladies and gentlemen, contrary to some people's notions, the Unalaska Corporation does share its wealth. It makes it possible for me tonight to introduce a man that we made one of us. He's an Unanga, like I am. And we gave him a name, and his name is Unika, and that is a storyteller. We also gave him the honor of being our spiritual sergeant at arms, just in case. And so now, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me a big thrill to introduce Simeon Oliver.
Chairman Phil Tudikoff, ladies and gentlemen, the graduating classes, I want to tell you I appreciate a great deal your having brought me here, for as most of you know, I haven't been here in many years. This has always been my home, in my heart, my mind, my soul. I'm not going to deliver a formal baccalaureate. I want to rather speak of some of my experiences here. I want to congratulate the graduating classes. We, as youngsters, did not have a high school here. We did have an elementary government school from which we went on from there. Had we the opportunity to go into higher education, we went outside to schools as I did. I'm going to touch a little bit upon the work I have done in the many years I have been away from here. Very quickly, I shall walk over to this blackboard and make a little outline of the state of Alaska. We knew it as a territory when I left. Very quickly, Barrow, Seward Peninsula, Norton Bay, the Yukon Delta, Bristol Bay, the Alaska Peninsula, Cook Inlet, the Kenai Peninsula, Prince William Sound, down southeastern Alaska.
Here we have barrels eastward to Barker Island, Trudeau Bay, now that everybody knows it, demarcation point here, dividing Canada from Alaska. We all know the Aleutians this way, at two here. I was born here in Chetnik, reared here in Unalaska. Siberia comes down about like this. There's the Kamchatka Peninsula down there. Now, the equator is about there. Here is the cusp of the Great Mackenzie River of Canada. At the mouth of this great river was the island of Herschel, from which many of our youngsters came, who lived here in the mission. Now, this is the, here are the Diomede Islands. Between them runs the international date line, as you know. It is also the time zone separating the two continents. At this point, the two islands are about 2.5 miles apart. I have sailed between these two islands. There is Russia, here is the United States. Here is your microphone.
I am not these trips into the Arctic have gone on over a period of many years. I began my first trip out of New York City under a small grant. This took me to Herschel Island at the mouth of the Mackenzie River, where I did my first recordings of songs, Eskimo songs or dances, and legends. I had always hoped that I could find as many songs and legends here in my own Aleutian Islands as I had found along the Arctic coasts and in the interior villages. There isn't a great many of the legends. There aren't a great many songs, perhaps from Greenland through Canada, Baffinland, and over into Siberia. We'll be able to find perhaps 150 or 200 songs. Most of these have died out because of the very strong influences from the outside world. I do not want you to lose your language ever. I would like to see you constantly teaching your youngsters to perpetuate these dialects. Talk to them constantly. Dig into the backgrounds of the older folks to find what you can concerning the legends, the songs, the dances. I'll give you an example of an Eskimo legend. They concern birds and animals. Here is a legend which concerns the little man of the tundra. He's quite a common character in the legends of the Eskimos. The Indians of the outside, particularly the Hopis and Indians, have their little people. The Irishman has his leprechaun, as you know, probably. These little people live in the tundra, away from the coast. Many times the old storytellers will say, this is a true story. He ends the story with the same words. This is a true story. This is done to impress the youngsters, the little ones. It starts out like this. This is a true story. Once upon a long time ago, a man living in the village on the coast decided to go on a hunting trip into the interior. For several days he hiked inland until he came to the shores of a great lake, and around this lake he found a narrow trail. This must be a caribou trail, he thought, but he found no signs of caribou in the trail. The tracks he found were the tiny muckluck tracks of tiny human beings, and he wondered why children should be on this trail alone. Following this trail around the shores of the lake, just before he entered a high clump of alders and willows, he found himself face to face with a tiny man who stood no taller than that. The little man wore a squirrel skin parka. He wore mufflers. He carried on his back a tiny pack. He carried a cane. The two men were so surprised at meeting each other, they stood for a while and stared at each other. It was the little man who spoke first. Pointing up at the tall man, he said, now I know who you are. You're one of those big men from out on the coast, and because you're big, you think you're better than I am. But I'm going to show you I can do anything as well as you can. Whereupon he took off his pack, laid it on the ground, he put his little walking stick against it. The tall man was amused. He took his pack off, laid it on the ground, and placed his walking stick on it. At the suggestion of the little man, the two stood back to back at a marker, a small willow twig in the middle of the road, in the middle of the path. Back to back. At his signal, go, they began their race around the lake. He said, I will beat you back to this marker to show you I am the better man. They ran in opposite directions. They passed each other on the other shore. Without saying a word, they continued, smiled at each other. The tall man arrived at the marker to find that the little man hadn't as yet arrived, so he sat on his pack and waited. It wasn't long before he heard hurried footsteps. Suddenly through the tall grasses, he saw the little man appear. The little man stopped in his tracks, seeing the tall man seated on his pack, resting, completely rested, grinning at him. The little man became angry. Without a word, he reached under his parka and came out with a piece of ivory sharpened at each end. Suddenly, he threw the weapon at the tall man. The tall man leaped off the ground. The little weapon went harmlessly past, and they raced for it. The tall man picked up the weapon, suddenly turned, pretending to throw at the little man. The little man leaped off the ground, and while he was still in the air, a quick flip of the weapon sent it spinning into the little man's stomach, and he fell to the ground, writhing in pain. The tall man rushed down to him and said, oh, I didn't mean to hit you.
I had intended to throw into the earth at your feet. What can I do? The little man said, there's nothing you can do now. I shall die. The weapon is poisoned. Before I die, he said, I would ask a favor of you. Down this trail, you see mountains in the distance. This trail leads to my home, a cave at the end of the trail. My wife is there. Tell her what you have done. Tell her I am gone. But make her understand that it is not your fault. It is mine. It was I who challenged you. It was I who lost the race, and I who lost my temper. Make her understand that it is not your fault. Whereupon the little man died. As he died, the coastal Eskimo picked his little body off the ground, carried it over to the top of a high boulder. On this boulder, he covered the remains with stones, rocks, so the birds and the animals couldn't get to the body. He performed a little ceremony over the grave and slowly and carefully came down. He picked up the little man's pack, turned slowly, looked at the grave, and headed in the direction of the mountains. He found the little man's wife. She stood no taller than that. She wore a little squirrel skin parkie, and in the back of her parkie she carried a baby so tiny you could hold it in the palm of your hand. He delivered his message to her and left the little lady crying. He returned to his village on the coast, hiking several days, and when he got to his village, he said to the chief, without going to his own igloo, he went directly to the chief, and he said to the chief, call all the people together. I have a confession to make. I have killed a man. The people were gathered in the kalha, the meeting place. He told them what he had seen, what he had done, and the old folks who believe in these little people of the tundra nodded their heads. But the young hunters shook their heads in disbelief. After that old man died, the young hunters who did not believe his story banded together, for they were afraid to go singly into that land of the Nunamutes, the inland people. Together they hiked for several days inland. They came to the shores of a great lake, and around this lake they found a narrow trail. They followed this trail until they came to a great boulder. On this boulder, they found a tiny grave. Rolling the stones away, they found the skeletal remains of the little man of the tundra and the weapon. This is a true story. Very often, the humor of the Eskimo storyteller comes out. You have this little squirrel all through the mountains and hills here. It was transplanted here from the mainland when I was a boy to give food to the foxes here. The fox brought a pretty good price in those days. The owl is considered a fool. The raven is always the wise bird. The squirrel is called chit-a-chit, because it makes that sound just before it goes into its burrow. That's the Eskimo word for chit-a-chit. The children like that. The owl is called ik-pik-puk. It means big owl. Puk means big.
This is a word of degradation. He's despised because he feeds on this little squirrel, which very often is our pet. The pet is loved. The story goes like this. Once upon a long time ago, there was a family of squirrels, one father, one mother, one little boy. They lived in a hole in the ground. They remained there all winter, and as the earth became warm and the sun began to shine, they awakened from the long sleep. The mother said to her husband and son, as she placed her pook sack on her shoulder, her game bag, "I'm going out into the meadow to gather some food." She crawled up the burrow, blinked her eyes in the bright sunlight, rounding a high tuft of grass which protected the entrance to her burrow. She went into the meadows to fill that little bag with food. As she was working out there alone, Ick-Pick-Puck came along out of the skies, swooped down, picked her up, carried her high into the air, and dropped her. As she lay out there with a broken back, Ick-Pick-Puck jumped upon that mother squirrel, picked out her eyes, ripped the skin down her back, and ate the fat off her spine. She did not show up in her settlement. Days passed when they found her out there. The husband and son were told about this. And the father said, "I'm going out into the meadows. You stay here until I return." He picked up his pook sack, tossed it on his shoulder, and ascended this tunnel to the surface of the earth. He rounded this high tuft of grass and went out into the same meadows. There, he filled his bag with food and returned. But as he was rounding this tuft of grass to go down into his burrow, whom should he meet but Ick-Pick-Puck, blocking the entrance to his home. Knowing the owl was a fool, knowing that he loved himself, knowing that he thought he was a singer and dancer, he said, "Now, before you pick out my eyes, rip the skin down my back, and eat the fat off my spine, let me sing you a song. I understand you're a great dancer. You have a great sense of rhythm. You're graceful." The owl was flattered, and he said, "Yes, I'll sing for you. I'll dance for you. But when you're through singing and I'm through dancing, I'm going to pick out your eyes, rip the skin down your back, and eat the fat off your spine." "Very well," he said. He dropped his food on the ground and began singing. Sikitla, ahla, 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 iyaya. Sikit la, ah la, 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 ya, ya, sikit kuna, puma kuna, chikitit! There are many of these songs, and this displays a little bit of the storyteller's humor. And the little kids will say, tell it again, kayu, kayu, adiga, adiga, fine, tell it again. There are many of these letters. Now, I want you, if you possibly can, to dig into your background, find the old folks, get all these stories from them. We need them. You have this wonderful heritage. It's marvelous. I think some of you graduates can think about doing this. It's a wonderful thought, and you would contribute a great deal to the rest of your people. I'm going to play now another lullaby. The lullaby you heard was given to me by Phil's father, Mike Tudikoff, years ago. We attended the government school together. Here's another melody. It is not an Aleut melody. I think both of these melodies are the influence of the music of the Russian church and the songs of the Russian church, or the folk songs of the Russians. How old they are, I don't know. This is a short melody, very simple. It has a fine melodic line. Much of your time, but several persons have asked me to play something else. Well, what I do here, I think, is a bit of nonsense. I'm going to play an improvisation of my own on a theme which I think is most universal. Every little boy, every little girl has at some time tried it on the piano. In this case, I'm playing only one of two parts, two piano parts, which have an orchestral background, but I think you will recognize the melody. I'm going to incorporate a touch of Tchaikovsky, Chopin, the Greek-Russian composer Rachmaninoff, and Franz Liszt, just a touch. This is a bunch of nonsense now, remember. Thank you. Thank you very much. Playing that little sequence of Rachmaninoff's Prelude in C-sharp minor, I just happen to think I've had one of the finest, most thrilling experiences of my life. During my college days in Chicago, at the Chicago Musical College, I had the privilege, as the thousands of students there have had, of hearing the world's greatest pianists, singers, violinists. Among them, Sergei Rachmaninoff, the great Russian composer and pianist. I came through here a few years back, many of you will remember, and I was a guest of Dr. White. You will remember Dr. White. As I got off the North Star, he introduced me to Bishop Alexei, whom I did not recognize. He wore a black robe and a long flowing beard, so I didn't recognize him. I was invited to dinner that night at the doctor's home. I was surprised to find that this doctor had sung his way through the University of Oregon and sang in church choirs for a number of years. On his piano was a stack of music, and after dinner, I accompanied him to his singing. Among these songs were the most difficult scores of Rachmaninoff's songs. I was here for several days, as you may recall, working with the Erdlicka expedition. And just before I left, I was taken to my vessel by Dr. White and Father Pantileev. He said, "I knew you as a boy like that." He said to me, "Would you like to meet Sergei Rachmaninoff?" I said I would be thrilled to meet him. He pulled out from his gown a letter and handed it to me. It was unsealed. It was written in Russian. On the front of the envelope was the name Sergei Rachmaninoff and his address in New York City. This address was about five blocks from where I was living with two young men at the time. I went back to New York. I tried several times to find him in his apartment, but they said he was on a world concert tour. When he finally came to New York, I went down there to his apartment building. There was a doorman, and he said, "Mr. Rachmaninoff is here. As you know, he's appearing as soloist at the New York Philharmonic." I took this letter up to the ninth floor of his apartment. I rang the doorbell, the buzzer, and a buxom young Russian lady came to the door. She was blonde, her hair was parted in the center. Her hair was very sternly combed, and there was a bun of braids in the back of her head. She stood no taller than that. She said, "Yes, sir," and I handed her the letter. She looked at it and closed the door in my face, left me standing in the corridor. Pretty soon the door opened, and here was the great Rachmaninoff. He invited me in. He asked me to have tea with him. We sat and talked for about 20 minutes. His home, his great apartment building, overlooked the Hudson River into Jersey. Here was a great big 9-foot Steinway grand piano. On the floor were manuscripts all about it, and on the top of the piano were other manuscripts. This man was a very prolific writer, as you know. We had tea at the little table nearby. This was one of the greatest thrills I have ever had in my life, and it began right here in this village. Thank you very much.
It was certainly a pleasure, and it's certainly a distinguished honor to have Mr. Oliver in our midst. I know I'm a proud possessor of one of his books, Son of the Smoky Sea. Now I have the honor of presenting the diplomas. I think this is the fun part of being with the school board. It's what we kind of look forward to all year, and then tonight, after some finger crossing in the finals, we can say, well, our kids have done it again. So with that, I would like to present the diplomas. We'll start with the eighth grade first. Teresa K. Cliff. Michael E. Bishop. Barry W. Fredericks. Glenn O. Hogginson. Andrea A. Hansen. Brenda A. Krukoff. Isaiah J. Krukoff. Galena M. Marculia. Johnny S. Nichols. Nikolai K. Paz. Mary E. Pritchett. Karen D. Robinson. Michelle I. Swetzoff. You know, a lot of us didn't know that these were the names of some of these kids still tonight. There are some of them called different things. This is really a fine eighth grade class. We'll look forward to them going on. And I hope that every one of them, 4 years from now, are setting over in the other one. Let's give our eighth grade hand a big round of applause. And now, you think you've really got the world with a tail, huh? This is just the beginning. You picked a good slogan. I would like to bring out I'd like to explain something about tonight. This is the first time that I've ever been before you people, unprepared to say anything. So we'll leave it that way. And we'll bring out the valedictorian of the class, George A. Pritchett. George. And the salutatorian of the class, Linda K. Dompier. You know, I think before I go on, I would like to say that I'm very proud of these two students who carried the highest grade point average. And I was going to say something else, but I decided not to. I think I'm going to cry. Leonard L. Lacanoff. Jim Scheisnikoff. Nick Galakianoff, Jr. Helen R. Walden. Gregory M. Calassini. Reuben S. Paz. Ladies and gentlemen, I step aside for the future. A hand to our senior class.
On behalf of the Unalaska City School Board, it's my pleasure to provide to certain members of this graduating class a little financial help that's going to help them, move them along their way. Each year, the school board, over the past many years, has granted nominal financial scholarships to members of the graduating class who rank high in their graduating class and who have definite plans for continuing their education beyond this particular date. Some of the boys and girls do not have definite plans at this stage, but on the basis of the plans that they do have, and on the basis of their four-year scholastic attainment, it's my pleasure on behalf of the Unalaska School Board to present a scholarship in the amount of $750 to Linda Dampier. And a second scholarship goes tonight to Greg Calassini. It's now my pleasure to turn, of course, for this program over to Mr. Emil Barakoff, who has a similar presentation to make on behalf of the Unalaska Corporation.
The Unalaska Corporation and its board of directors would like to congratulate Dave, great graduating class, and also the seniors of Unalaska High School. I'd encourage all of you to continue your education. It's probably the most valuable tool you're going to have throughout your life. And tonight, the Unalaska Corporation and Board of Directors is going to present a young person who feel has done a great job in high school and has come a long way. Each year, the corporation is going to be granting a $650 scholarship. And tonight, the scholarship is going to Nick Galfiano, Jr.
To our seniors, because in my eagerness to see them get these scholarships, we skipped over one very important part of the program, and I apologize to you for that. And as soon as we conclude this part of the portion of the program, we'll go back and have those addresses of each senior. Now, for one last presentation to be made on behalf of the City of Unalaska. I turn the podium over to Mayor Stan Holmes.
On behalf of the City of Unalaska and the City Council, I'd like to award a scholarship of $500 to a graduating senior. 500 isn't a whole lot, but it does help when you get there. And this goes to the graduating senior, the highest grade average that's continuing on to school. This year's Linda Dompier.
Mr. Gregory, school board, parents, teachers, and friends, good evening. I'm speaking tonight to give a special thanks. First, to my family for the help and patience they've given me in my last year of high school. I thank my fellow classmates for just being around to help if they were needed. My third special thanks goes to my calculator, which helped me tremendously in my homework. Next thanks goes to all my teachers who didn't want to see me in school next year, so they worked hard to make sure I passed. Thank you, Mr. LaCourse, for being my senior class advisor. Finally, I thank all of you for coming and sharing this night with me, as well as the other members of the graduation class. Thank you.
Faculty, ladies and gentlemen. Starting my high school years here in Unalaska, and then returning this year to finish high school, has brought many memories to me. The first day walking into classes was the longest day of my school year. By the end of the day, I'd met most of my classmates who had become close friends. Towards the end of my ninth grade year, my classmates had made me comfortable with the small school atmosphere. Leaving soon after school let out, I moved back to Roseburg, Oregon for my 10th and 11th grade years, returning here each summer, hiding from the sun. Then last summer, I'd made my mind up that I liked the smaller schools, for it had more to offer me as an individual. So here I am tonight, graduating with many fond memories concerning attendance at Unalaska High. At this time, I'd like to thank my family, my classmates, and a special thanks to my brother and his wife, Zaganita Cutright, and also to my mom and dad, who were unable to attend tonight. Thank you.
Good evening. This evening I will briefly review my school career. I entered the Unalaska school system in the mid-60s, in which I remained here until my 10th grade year. Thus, in the summer of 1976, I decided to venture south to the lower 48. While in Texas, I received an opportunity to enter a plumbing program as an apprentice. After several years of training, I became somewhat lonesome and decided to return to my hometown. After careful consideration, I decided one of my main major goals in life would be to finish high school. Consequently, I entered Unalaska High School in September of 1978. This year, I have been active in several school activities, notably student council, where I was privileged to serve as president. Further, I was fortunate to be selected all-tournament in basketball and received an unexpected surprise when I was elected king of the senior prom. Even though I leave high school tonight, these and many more fond memories will remain. I want to take this opportunity to thank my dad for all his support during my high school years. Also, I'd like to take this opportunity to wish my fellow graduates the best of luck. Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Gregory, school board members, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, I'm going to briefly tell you about my basketball career. I first began playing basketball when I was in sixth grade, and at that time, it was JV's. We played with the rec centers now. In my ninth grade year, I went on my first basketball trip. As a manager for the Raiders. The following year, my 10th grade year, I traded manager's job to play for the Raiders. I didn't get to play too much that year, but I had fun. In my 11th grade year, I made the starting five. We didn't win the championship, but we had fun, played our best, and that's what counts. The year I enjoyed the most, it was my 12th grade year when I captained the Raiders. Yes, excuse me, I'm a little nervous right now. We had some tough games, but as a team we did what we set out to do. And that was to take at least second place in the Elusin tournament, which consisted of Sandpoint and Cove and ourselves, and first place in Tilliac tournament. We had some tough games against King Cove, and I can still remember them. One of our most important games was against King Cove, and it was for second place, which is very important to us, because the following years they always beat us, and it's a tough game. The game was decided at the last minute. We beat them by 1 point. And I guess it only goes to show that when the going gets tough, the Raiders get going. And in closing tonight, I'd like to give a very special thanks to my mom and dad for putting up with me and having patience through my high school career. Thank you very much.
Good evening, Mr. Gregory, teachers and faculty, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to start off by thanking the family and friends for being here. This evening, I'm going to talk about when I first met my fellow graduates. To start off, Scott Paz transferred from California last year, been here since. George Pritchett last year transferred from Cordova and went to school here since then. Lenny Lacana, I met in grade school and went to school with him except for 10th and 11th grade years, which he moved to Texas and then he returned for his senior year. Kellen Walton, who is from Washington transferred here this year. Linda Dompier transferred from Oregon in the ninth grade and has been going to school in the ninth and 12th year here. Greg Calistini, who transferred from California, I met in grade school. And last but not least, Tim Chadnikoff has gone to school here with me since grade school. Thank you all for listening, and I would like to wish all of my class graduates good luck in the years to come. Thank you.
Good evening. I would like to start out. Good evening. Briefly, I will discuss the senior reel. The senior reel traditionally used to give gender class men or persons items thought to be dear to them during high school. The senior class of 1979 has decided to will some of its dearest items to some of their favorite underclassmen in Alaska City High School. So by request, here goes. I, Linda Dompier, will the willpower that got me through my senior years, Tom Robinson and Paula Lucano. I, Nick Galactiano, will my lunch ticket to Curtis Parker and hope that he could still make it. I, Greg Calistini, will my prized possession backpack to Randy Green. I, George Pritchett, leave my best books to anyone who can understand them. I, Scott Paws, leave to all the underclassmen my booklet of excuses for tardiness, absentness, and homework not completed, etc. I, Helen Walden, will my great class conduct to each and every student to brighten up every teacher's day just as I have done this year. I, Lenny Lucano, will my basketball ability to Paul Warner and Greg Schubauer. Also, to Karen Robinson, I will the happiness and success I've had this year. Last but not least, I will for Lisa Davis the power to make it through school. Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Gregory, school board members, faculty, and friends. As a graduating senior, I have had the opportunity to observe a multitude of changes, not only in our community, but in our school system. It seems we've come a long way. Regressing for a moment, I can fondly remember the uniqueness of the old white wooden building. Freezing pipes, cold rooms, creaking doors, and shuttling from the trailer to chalet during moments of wonderful Aleutian weather. Still, even when faced with these physical shortcomings, we've improved our minds. Almost overnight, it seems, the magical day came. Wow, we're moving into the new school. Clean, bright halls, lights that work, and what's this? Real heat, unheard of. Boy, were we spoiled. The good times were here. We had a real high school. Since that time, the high school highlights include basketball trips, student council activities, yearbook layouts, and in particular, traveling to the East Coast with the government class. And further, through my school career, I was afforded an opportunity by the teaching staff to develop opinions based not upon uneducated precedents, but upon enlightenment gained through objective research. Outside of school, I have had an opportunity to see Unalaska develop from a small fishing port into one of the major transshipping bases in the United States. I will retain these fond memories of Unalaska forever. At this time, I would like to take this opportunity to thank two very special people in my life, my mother and my father. Thank you very much. I would, last but not least, I would like to thank my graduate seniors for sticking it out with me, and I wish them the very best in their future. And I'd like to thank everybody for being here this evening, for making my graduation possible. Thank you.
Class asked me to talk to the underclassmen, especially to you 8th graders, and to give you some words of wisdom. Future graduates, you're about to embark on possibly your last 4 years of school. I'm not going to tell you it's going to be easy, but you're the one who decides whether you make it or don't. You can, if you want, make these last 4 years one full of happy memories. I know my last 4 years hold the best times of my life. Hopefully, yours will too. The next 4 years will bring you much experience and luck. Take advantage of the experiences and keep careful hold of the rewards that come your way. And the next 4 years will pass with happy memories, and before you know it, it will be you, not hot. Not I to stand here before you tonight. Thank you.
Let's all stand as we are going to pray and focus on our graduating seniors tonight. We don't want them to leave here without some prayer power behind them from us, because they have a big future ahead of them. There's tremendous potential in these young people, so we want to send them off properly. Let's pray right now. Father, we just thank you for each person here who has completed this course of studies. We ask that you give them the power and the strength to go on in the future. We ask you that you will lead them into the right ways, that they needn't be sidetracked, that they can go straight ahead with goals that you have for them. Let them be examples to their community and their home. And we just ask you'll bless each one. We thank you for them. Amen.
Thank you.
Hey, Bill.
Thank you.